As many of you know, I have a son named Samuel, so I feel obligated to begin by saying that we didn't name him because our story reflected this biblical story in any way. We simply just really liked the name. But as I spent time with the text this week, new things stood out to me in the story, and I appreciate this rich narrative that we have with this important section today about Samuel hearing the call of God. So the story of Samuel actually begins a couple chapters before the text today with the story of his mother, Hannah. It's an interesting story of a miraculous birth to a barren woman. And like other similar stories, Abraham and Sarah, Jacob and Rachel, and later John the Baptist, this child will be an important child, pivotal in the story of God's people. So the narrative story goes like this. In chapter one, Hannah is explained to be the one of two wives of Elkanah. The other wife, Penina, has children, and yet we understand that Elkanah loves Hannah, even though God has closed her womb. And we find out that not only is Hannah without children, but Penina is horrible to her. The text says provoking and irritating her year after year. So Hannah is weeping and distraught. And in the story, she goes to the temple on a special day to pray, but she is deeply distressed. She prays to God and promises that if God would just grant her a child, she would give her son to the Lord to be a servant of the temple, to be a servant of the priest. The priest there at the time, while she is praying, Eli sees her praying. The text says she is praying silently and her lips move, but her voice isn't heard. And so Eli, the priest, accuses her of public drunkenness. She explains that she is not drunk, but she is troubled and she is praying to God for a child. She is pouring out her soul. Eli then believes her and says that she should go in peace and that God should grant her petition. So she returns to her husband and later conceives and bears a son. And then she fulfills her promise, returning to the temple and dedicating him to the Lord, and he stays with Eli at the temple. After that narrative in chapter two, we have Hannah singing a song. My heart exults in the Lord. My strength is exalted in my God. The bows of the mighty are broken, but the feeble gird on strength. Those who were full have hired themselves out for bread, but those who were hungry are fat with spoil. The barren has borne seven, but she who has many children is forlorn. The Lord makes poor and makes the rich. He brings low, he also exalts. He raises up the poor from the dust. He lifts the needy from the ash heap to make them sit with princes and inherit the seat of honor. Maybe this song prayer sounds familiar to you. It's very similar to the song that Mary sings in the Magnificat, which we sang when we sang the Holden Evening Prayer and is usually recounted during the season of Advent. These miraculous births of babies born against the odds, children become very important in the biblical narrative of the Hebrew people and of Christian understanding. So, after Hannah sings her song, we have the story today from today's text where God speaks to Samuel in the night. At first, Samuel hears the voice as Eli calling to him, but after the third time, Eli realizes that it is God that must be speaking to Samuel in the night. When Samuel and Eli realize that this is God calling, Samuel presents himself to God and acknowledges that this is God speaking to him, and God gives him the first message for Samuel to give to the people. It ends up not being a very easy message to give. The message is about their current leadership coming to an end. Like many stories in the biblical narrative, it's a story of a great reversal. As Hannah's song outlines, and as the narrative of justice declares through the biblical story, the weak are made strong and those with power are brought down. So, barren Hannah, bullied by her sister wife, accused of public drunkenness, is brought the son that changes everything for the Hebrew people. The one with some power initially in this story, the high priest Eli, ends up stepping down, and his sons, who are evildoers but next in line, are killed in a battle. Later, Samuel becomes the one that will lead the people, the final judge, and he will crown their first King Saul and their next King David. Walter Brueggemann, a biblical scholar, says about Samuel that it provides a lively and daring sense of beginning. This new narrative of Israel's new possibilities in their trajectory towards the monarchy. But it doesn't appear just due to personalities or because of the usual concentrations of socioeconomic and military power, but because of the inscrutable, inexplicable initiative of God. The story includes surprise, but also faithfulness, not a routine political narrative or the way things usually go, because as we understand it, this is God's story. So the narrator tells us that God closed Hannah's womb, but then she prayed, and then God granted the prayer of Hannah. For the people of God who heard this telling and retelling of a familiar story, it was a clear indication that Samuel had an important role and God was guiding the narrative. This is the story of God's people. So as the story goes, Israel's rise to power is told in this particular way. The storytellers want to show that David's monarchy, central to this bigger narrative of God's people, is a story that does not rely just on personalities or worldly impressive forms of power, but complex stories about the rising of kings is told beginning with this woman, this barren woman, and Hannah's sincere complaint and sincere prayer and request to God that is answered. And this becomes the story of God's people, the story of big reversals where we understand that all of life, all of history belongs to God. And this will lead to the story of David, a shepherd boy who becomes a powerful king. Israel, like Hannah, like David, moves from weakness and need to power and well-being, but only through God. As a younger person, I didn't care much for stories of God speaking directly to people because it seemed both miraculous and a bit suspicious. As someone who, as a young and idealistic college student, was bent on doing the very best thing possible I could do with my life, it would have been nice if a voice came to me in the night telling me exactly what to do and what to say and where I should go. And while I know some people do have experiences of God, of hearing God's voice directly in this way, I certainly have not had that experience. So I have some resentment for call stories like this. As I spent some time further discerning my own vocation and call, I came to hear wise people share with me the idea that call need not be this kind of voice in the night call, but could come from our community or from other kinds of possibilities. So I've come to believe that our callings come to us in multiple ways. H. Richard Niebuhr, a Protestant theologian, proposes that callings come in parts. And I think that's true. The way he describes is the first being some sort of inner knowing. This might be a voice in the night, but more likely it's just a nudge or a feeling, an awareness, an epiphany that we should do something that seems right. This could be individually, or it could be as a community discerning the way forward. But our calling also comes through meaningful and connected combinations of circumstances, experiences, and resources. Individually, we can see our opportunities, talents, and skills come together to provide a way forward. As communities, we can understand a shared vision, and then opportunities and assets come together to fit a project or a mission. It's not necessarily just common sense or a stereotype combination of practical skills, but things coming together in a deeply connected and meaningful way. Finally, one of the other ways we can hear God calling or experience a call is through our community, through the voices of those we know, those we love, who recognize something we may not see even in ourselves, or through the invitation or of a community partner or a neighbor to do something new. There's lots of ways in which our calls can come through community. In our tradition, we believe in the importance of a call from a community, which is why for ministry and pastoral roles, we are ordained after a community recognizes our gifts and calling and affirms and invites us into a pastoral role. And as was my life experience, I'm drawn to the call that can be interpreted through the voice of a mentor. In Samuel's story, Samuel doesn't at first recognize God, but he's open and he's willing and he continues to listen. He keeps checking in on Eli, and we need to keep checking in with mentors and friends. What is it we are seeing and hearing? What is possible? Does the combination of opportunity and resource make meaningful sense to wise folks that we know? Do they affirm and hear the calling the way that we do? So as I consider our time and place, our community, I'm drawn into wondering about God's call for us, for Keystone. As we look forward to this time of big transition, will we listen together, staying open to hearing God's voice and wondering what God's story might be for us? I don't see God's story as a preordained or determined story necessarily, but the question is how we might participate in God's big story, one that begins with barrenness in a difficult time where visions are rare, this story of major reversals, where the dominant ideas of this world are turned upside down, the poor are made rich, the wealthy turned away empty, the weak and lowly lifted up, and the proud and mighty brought down. This barren woman accused of drunkenness bears the son who will change the course of history for a people. Later, a Messiah born in a stable chooses a radical baptism in the desert and preaches about the kingdom of God at hand, a kingdom of love and justice. Not the empires of greed and oppression we have come to know, but communities of care, compassion, grace, and mercy. This great reversal of domination systems to shalom wholeness, of shared resources and collective liberation. So what is God's call to us within this larger narrative? I don't think we know. We will have to wait and listen together. One more interesting point in this story is that Eli's vision is failing. He is getting older. And yet he's able to listen with Samuel to hear God's voice, to mentor him as he listens. So even though the message becomes a difficult one for Eli, that his role in his line of priests and leaders is coming to an end, Eli is able to encourage Samuel to be faithful to God in this new and different way going forward. Samuel represents a new beginning for the people. As we all know, it can be difficult to go through any change, and for new ways to emerge, it can be important to stay open to the possibilities of God's call being unexpected, to see new ways forward. We also hear in the story that Samuel's story begins in a difficult time. If you read the book of Judges that happens just before this text, you might read about some really terrible things that have been going on for these people. The tribal city-states with clan leadership continue to devolve more and more. Everyone does what is right in his own eyes, says Judges chapter 21. And in this text today, we hear the word of the Lord was rare in those days. Visions were not widespread. So the story of Keystone that Rich repeated and reminded us of in the letter he sent is that it has been through its own near-death experience and its own resurrection. And now we find ourselves in a new time of transition. Globally, we see our situation very difficult with climate change and war. Our concerns about the world around us and our own situation probably feel very big. And I don't know if the word of the Lord is being given in dreams or in nighttime calls to many people, but it can feel like God's vision for our world, that vision we understand of wholeness and shalom, does seem like a rare and precious thing. We also, unfortunately, see the horrors of what some people who call themselves Christian are doing in our world and in our country. So it can feel very overwhelming to consider the call of God as a church community in this time. But this story gives me glimpses of what our part in this larger story might be. Whether or not we hear the voice in the night, we can listen together, listen carefully, seek confirmation of the nudges and the glimpses that we see from, check those with wise mentors, with community partners, with friends, continuing to find our way and listening for the call of what's next in God's big story for our world and for our community. We await the calling and we await the way forward to become clearer through the unique combination of what emerges from our community and time and place, and through the mentoring of wise ones around us. The openness to what emerges in our shared listening and the community call in discernment. And who knows, maybe God will call one of us in the night. But more likely, through good listening and willingness to be ready for new possibilities, our community will find its way in God's big story of redeeming love and justice. Amen.